The headlines: the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank since Sunday rises to 4 as a state of alert is announced in parts of the occupied territory. Political tensions remain high in Pakistan as supporters of ousted Prime Minister Imran Khan hold nationwide protests against his dismissal. Results from France's presidential election show incumbent Emmanuel Macron will face far-right leader Marine Le Pen in a runoff vote. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces since Sunday has risen to 4 amid tensions over a Palestinian retaliatory attack that killed 3 in Tel Aviv last week. A Palestinian teenager succumbed to the injuries he sustained during an Israeli raid on the city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. He was among the 10 Palestinians injured by Israeli live fire. Regime forces also arrested 20 others. In response, local resistance groups have declared a state of alert to confront Israeli raids. 2 Palestinian women and 1 man were also shot dead across the occupied West Bank on Sunday, one of them a widowed mother of 6. Palestinians have ramped up their resistance against the regime over the past months. They say this is a legitimate response to Israeli crimes and occupation. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, has given us more details about the Israeli killings of Palestinians the previous day.
Mohammed Zakani was wounded during the second raid to Jenin. Yesterday, Israeli forces raided Jenin. Israeli undercover units opened fire at a vehicle where the brother of Palestinian martyr who carried out the operation in Tel Aviv, Raad Hazem, the brother, his mother, and his younger brother were inside this vehicle. They were surprised to see Israeli forces. It was not an attempt to arrest them because the Israeli forces opened heavy fire at the vehicle. Mohammed Zakani, the 17-year-old Palestinian, was there and wounded in this incident. He was among 10 others were wounded. However, he succumbed to his injuries this morning. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, during the weekly cabinet meeting yesterday, he praised the Israeli forces and the Israeli military. And he said that the Israeli military and the Israeli security agencies have the green light to use their weapons and to kill Palestinians in cold blood. This is what happened yesterday. A 42-year-old Palestinian woman, a widowed woman, a mother of 6, she was trying to go and visit her relatives. The checkpoint was between her house and the house of her relatives. She was surprised to see Israeli soldiers pointing their weapons at her. She raised her hands, but she didn't stop, as the Israeli forces immediately opened fire at her and killed her. Then later, they said they didn't find any weapon with her. Yesterday, there were clashes, heavy clashes in Al-Khadr near Bethlehem. 21-year-old Palestinian man was shot in the back. So it's not Israeli forces shooting Palestinians to disperse, let's say, protesters. No, they are using their weapon in order to kill Palestinians in cold blood.
Moving on, hours after the ouster of Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan, his supporters take to the streets to express opposition to the parliamentary no-confidence vote against him. Thousands of people rallied in different Pakistani cities. They held placards and chanted slogans in support of Khan's party, Tehreek-e-Insaf. The protesters called the dismissed prime minister the choice of the people. Khan was unseated on Sunday after a long day impasse in parliament. Finally, the opposition secured a majority vote in support of a no-confidence motion against him. He's accused of political and economic failures, but says that he has fallen victim to a U.S.-backed regime change plot. Pakistan's parliament is meeting later Monday to elect a new prime minister. Opposition leader Shehbaz Sharif is the likely candidate to replace Khan. With 97% of the votes counted in France's presidential election, incumbent Emmanuel Macron and far-right leader Marine Le Pen head for the April 24th runoff. The latest results show Macron on top with more than 27% of the votes. Le Pen comes second with over 23%. This would be a repeat of the 2017 runoff between the two candidates, but this year the gap between them has become much closer. Macron and Le Pen have campaigned on sharply opposing views for France. Le Pen has pledged radical domestic and international changes for the country, but Macron criticizes her approach as one aligned with populists and xenophobes. He called the upcoming 2 weeks a decisive period for the future of France and Europe.
The first round of the French presidential election is finished, and as expected, there will be a repeat of 2017. Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen will duel once again in the second round of voting.
Maybe the French people will surprise everyone and elect Marine Le Pen. This is her second time making it to the second round, and maybe people will give her a chance. But I think Macron will win because too many people are either scared to vote for Le Pen or feel they will be disappointed by her.
I think Macron is brilliant and that he has handled the coronavirus crisis very well. Le Pen is too racist and too extreme right.
Macron's team brushed off recent polls that actually have Le Pen winning in the second round, as she has soared in the last month to make the race a dead heat.
Now everything begins. We need to explain the project we had for the five coming years with the president, because the president was not in a position to completely explain his project. He was at work for the French people because of the Ukrainian crisis.
In a close third place, just 1% behind Le Pen, was Jean-Luc Mélenchon, a former Socialist Party minister who turned left. In a bid to win over centrists, he didn't embrace the yellow vests, and barring a huge cache of votes somewhere, he's headed home and perhaps has aged out of politics. In fourth place, with a disappointing 7%, was mainstream media pundit Eric Zemmour, who was seemingly given control of the campaign agenda for months, despite setting new lows in Islamophobia and racism. The mainstream conservative candidate, Valérie Pécresse, was a distant fifth. The so-called Sarkozyist candidate didn't even get the endorsement of former President Nicolas Sarkozy. The once mighty Socialist Party might be finished after garnering less than 2%, and only the two communist candidates scored less. Finishing a surprising seventh was Jean Lassalle, the only MP to wear a yellow vest in French Parliament. Parliament immediately suspended itself, and LaSalle was fined.
Is Le Pen still so shocking after 5 years of Macronism and in a post-Donald Trump world? Has Macron provided enough stability in a post-coronavirus landscape? We'll have the verdict of France's voters on April 24th. Romain Mazahari, Paris.
Italy's nurses and healthcare workers have staged a national strike affecting hospitals across the country. Unionists are calling on the government to review the collective contract, adjusting salaries to meet changes in skyrocketing cost of living.
On Friday, tens of thousands of nurses and non-medical health professionals walked off their job and staged a nationwide strike, demanding improved pay and better nurse-to-patient ratios. The industrial action had been called by a number of healthcare unions in response to the government's inaction that had followed another strike called in January. Italy's nurses have been celebrated as heroes for treating desperately ill coronavirus patients, often with little equipment and knowledge of the illness. However, today they feel forgotten.
In the midst of the pandemic, the Prime Minister himself said we won't forget about the nurses. The truth is that they have forgotten about us. We were expecting a pay raise considering the challenges and the suffering we had to go through during the pandemic. Negotiations are underway for the contractual renewal of the health sector. Let's see how it unfolds.
About 450,000 nurses are currently employed in Italy, a country with a population of about 60 million people. According to a recent OECD report, the average gross annual salary for nurses is among the lowest in Europe, while the ratio between nurses and the population is 6 per 1,000 inhabitants, against 18 in Switzerland and Norway, 13 in Germany, and 11 in France.
The pandemic has further shown that a shortage of nurses is greatly affecting Italy's healthcare system. Nurses are exhausted today. They had to go through insurmountable challenges during the COVID crisis, including the lack of appropriate gear, knowledge, and the high number of patients. Also, some mismanagement on the part of the hospital administrations made things harder. In some regions where hospitals are run mostly by private companies, the healthcare system has collapsed catastrophically because of the COVID.
Privatized and commercialized, Italy's healthcare system has been thrown upside down over the past 20 years, a system in which private and public clinics compete for taxpayers' money came into play in 1997 when Rome opted to decentralize the Italian healthcare system and give more autonomy to regional governments. Lombardy is one of the Italian regions where the healthcare private sector is largely supported by public funding. It was also one of the worst hit regions in Europe by COVID-19 and the epicenter at the beginning of the European outbreak. Experts believe that Lombardy's fragmented healthcare system snarled the lines of command across the region, throwing hospitals into chaos. That caused the deaths of thousands of people during the first wave of COVID in Italy. Max Civili, Rome.
The World Bank has forecast a bleak economic outlook for Ukraine and the region amid Russia's military operation in the country. In a report, the bank predicted that Ukraine's economy will collapse by more than 45% this year. The projected figure is far worse than the 10 to 35% downturn the International Monetary Fund predicted last month. The bank added that Russia will also see a more than 11% decline in its GDP. The World Bank said the entire region is suffering from economic consequences as a result of the war, adding the conflict has caused prices of grains and energy to shoot up as well. The Washington-based institution reiterated that this is the second major shock to hit the regional economy in 2 years after the coronavirus pandemic. The United States has reaffirmed commitment to supplying arms to Ukraine in its ongoing conflict with Russia. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that his country will provide Ukraine with weapons it needs so that it will be able to beat back Russia. Sullivan added Washington has been working around the clock to deliver such weapons. That's why the Ukrainian president has expressed skepticism that Washington would arm Kiev in a way it has vowed to do. In an interview with CBS News, Vladimir Zelensky said he doesn't have the confidence that his country will be receiving the much-needed arms. He also called on the EU to impose more sanctions on Moscow. In a telephone conversation with the German chancellor, Zelensky demanded embargo on Russian oil and gas. Germany has so far resisted doing so due to its heavy reliance on Russian energy. However, Germany's gas imports from Russia have been cut by around 15%. The United Nations says over 4.5 million Ukrainians have fled their country since the start of Russia's offensive in late February. According to UN figures, 90% of the refugees are women and children, as Ukrainian authorities don't allow men of military age to leave the country. A further 7.1 million people are said to be internally displaced. The UN also says over 200,000 non-Ukrainians have fled over the past 2 months. Poland hosts the largest number of refugees. Romania, Moldova, and Hungary are among other countries witnessing an influx of Ukrainian refugees. Europe is facing its biggest refugee crisis since World War II. The Russian Human Rights Commissioner confirms that Moscow and Kiev have carried out another prisoner exchange despite an ongoing conflict between the two neighbors. Tatiana Moskolkova says four employees of Russia's Atomic Energy Corporation, that is, have returned home from Ukraine. According to the commissioner, some Russian soldiers and civilians have also been freed. The move includes the release of a number of Russian and Ukrainian truck drivers as well. Ukraine has confirmed the latest prisoner swap. The deputy prime minister says a dozen Ukrainian soldiers and 14 civilians have been freed as part of the prisoner swap. This was the third exchange of soldiers and civilians held by Kiev and Moscow since the start of the conflict. Elsewhere, Iran is standing its ground over the JCPOA revival talks. Tehran says Washington is yet to show a real will to return to its commitments by removing the so-called maximum pressure campaign in its entirety.
Unfortunately, the U.S. seeks to keep in place elements of the maximum pressure campaign, which was designed by those who opposed the JCPOA. All elements of that campaign created to prevent the Iranian nation from reaping economic benefits of the JCPOA must be removed.
Khatibzadeh said the U.S. has delayed the necessary political decisions to settle the remaining issues for months. He said Iran has offered the U.S. some initiatives and it's ready to finish the Vienna talks on the revival of the deal as soon as it receives the necessary signals. The Iranian official, however, warned that the window of opportunity will not remain open forever. The Vienna negotiations between Iran and the remaining signatories to the JCPOA have been paused since a month ago with a number of issues still unresolved. Iran has launched an exhibition to display its latest achievements in the field of nuclear and relevant technologies, including therapies, products, and new equipment. This is part of the country's programs to mark the National Day of Nuclear Technology. Yusuf Jalali has this report.
A glimpse into Iran's capabilities in the nuclear industry. This exhibition showcases the latest made-in-Iran nuclear products, ranging from radiopharmaceuticals to plasma therapy for cancer patients. Among them is Gallophabi, a radiomedicine used in the efficient diagnosis of cancer. Its developers say it is an outstanding achievement in the nuclear sector. For security reasons, we cannot show the experts' faces. The exhibition comes as part of ceremonies marking the National Day of Nuclear Technology, which falls on April 9th. It commemorates Iran's first enrichment of uranium at an industrial scale in 2006. In addition to the 77 new achievements displayed here, on Saturday, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi unveiled what he called comprehensive strategic document for nuclear development. The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says the document provides a roadmap for the country's nuclear program in the next two decades. Since Iran indigenized its nuclear industry, it has always been haunted by sanctions. In 2015, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, was signed between Iran and the world powers, which promised a sanctions relief for the country in return for curbs on its nuclear program. The U.S. left the accord in 2018 and reinstated its sanctions, prompting Iran to retaliate by scaling back its commitments to the JCPOA. Iran and the remaining parties to the deal have been engaged in the Vienna talks to salvage the accord. The discussions envisage the removal of all sanctions against Iran in return for the country coming back to full compliance with the agreement.
By displaying these nuclear products, Iran tries to show the West that sanctions have not been an obstacle to its nuclear ambitions. At the same time, it wants to tell the JCPOA parties that Tehran will continue to develop its nuclear industry even beyond the JCPOA limits if sanctions are not removed. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
I am now in Tehran, standing by the Chitgar River. When you live in a busy, crowded city like Tehran, then walking by this artificial river could be very enjoyable. Of course, nothing is like a natural scenery. It's been for a long time that I haven't had a tour to the beautiful nature of Iran, and honestly, I really miss those amazing sceneries. So, today I'm going to take a tour to Bandar Mahshahr in southern Iran in order to visit the beautiful region of Horemusa. I'm sure you'll like it. Horemusa is one of the firths of the Persian Gulf. Khor, literally firth, means a long, narrow indentation of the seacoast. Horemusa is a triangular firth northwest of the Persian Gulf. Horemusa is 20 to 50 meters deep. However, its depth reaches 73 meters in some points. This depth has made it possible for the ships weighing up to 70,000 tons to easily move along this canal. Horemusa has small branches on its western side. The oil tankers which move toward Bandar Imam Khomeini have to sail through Horemusa. This canal is one of the most important natural canals of Iran. North of this canal, there are Bandar Imam Khomeini, Bandar Mahshahr, Sarbandar, and Petrochemical Special Economic Zone of Mahshahr. I am now at Bandar Mahshahr. The weather is pleasant, though a little bit humid. Horemusa is connected to the Persian Gulf, and I feel really excited to see it. Here's the magnificent Persian Gulf. The smell that comes from the Persian Gulf is the most pleasant scent I've ever experienced in whole of my life. Here we have the Persian Gulf and Horemusa. Let's get closer to the sea. Actually, Horemusa has a diverse flora and fauna. The fauna includes humpback dolphins, flamingos, crested terns, sternidaes, small crabs and fish of different types, as well as lots of beds of different types, which are hard to count. Because of its unique nature, Horemusa is an ideal tourist attraction for nature lovers. Oh my God, look at there! Several dolphins are playing at a far distance. I have to ride in a boat in order to see them very well. Dolphins don't approach the seacoast. The reflection of the sun ray on the dolphin's skin makes you think that each time that one of them jumps out of the water, a piece of gold is jumping. Oh, I can't take my eyes off all the beauties of the Persian Gulf. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The French presidential election in 2022 is here, and the results so far show a downturn in the participation rate, around 65%, down sharply from the same point back in the year 2017 when elections took place. The obvious question, why do French voters feel that they should not come out and vote like before, especially during uncertain economic times? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at Emmanuel Macron, the current president's five-year report card, and why the contender Marine Le Pen actually has gained in popularity. And we will also take a look at the Muslim vote and why Macron may have lost that demographic. First, let's get an idea about some of the results that have come out from our correspondent, Rami Mazari, who joins us from Paris to tell us about that. Rami, at this point, we know that some initial results have trickled in. Tell us about that and, of course, any developments there that you have.
Very, very close race between incumbent Emmanuel Macron and the 2017 runner-up, Marine Le Pen. The Macron with 28%, Le Pen with 23%. A distant third, well, not a distant third, but Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the leftist, he scored 20%. That's a real failure. It's the exact same score that he got back in 2017. It really shows the failure of the French left to really sort of do anything. You had four out of the top five candidates be far right, and that's the way that it ended. Eric Zemmour, very, very repugnant, convicted racist. And they seemingly handed the campaign agenda to him for months, from from the fall until Ukraine. It was all the disgusting Islamophobia and xenophobia coming out of his mouth, and everybody just sort of following him in the mainstream media. And that's this explains why there was such high abstention. People don't really care about Islamophobia. It's not new here in France. It's not 2007. Running fourth was Valérie Pécresse, Sarkozy's candidate. But she didn't even get the endorsement of Sarkozy. I won't go on and on. I will note that Jean LaSalle got 3%. He is the only person who wore a yellow vest in the French Parliament. They immediately suspended Parliament, and they fined him 1,500 euros. Good to see him getting 3%. And then at the bottom, I'll point out, the Socialist Party is totally smashed. She got just 2%, and then the two communist parties, they got less than 1% each. They are both Trotskyists, meaning that they disavow the Soviet Union and Cuba and basically every sort of working, and China and any sort of working socialist state. What they have already pivoted to, we have heard it behind me. We're supposed to all get behind, together, Macron to fight Marine Le Pen. The problem is that it's 2022. We've seen Macron's record. He legalized the state of emergency, which targeted Muslims, hurt them the most. He passed the anti-separatist law, which tried to get minors to not wear the hijab. He failed there, but he succeeded in neutering the rights of many other Muslim rights, freedom of assembly, freedom of religious worship, for various political freedoms.
And I just, you know, I think it's going to really come down to now with what's going on now. It's not Islamophobia. You know, this is not 2017. We have the, you know, Trump president. Marine Le Pen is really not so shocking. And now, most of all, Macron was elected in 2017 to sweep out the mainstream. He is the mainstream. And he was elected because the mainstream parties were so corrupt. He set the record for ministers who had to quit for corruption just only 2.5 years into his term. So how are voters going to view him? There's a very, very, very interesting poll set just this week. 7 out of 10 French people want Macron to leave office. So that's really certainly very, very telling. The fact that we are at a dead heat now really should force us to look over at Hungary, where Marine Le Pen's counterpart, her right nationalist counterpart, he had very, very close polls, and then he had a very, 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 very large victory. I think personally we are headed in that same direction. Why? Because it's not 2017. People aren't so scared of Marine Le Pen, and especially Muslims know. We all know that Emmanuel Macron is an Islamophobe. He's not a centrist. He's had 5 years. I've already, you know, what he got away with in terms of Muslim oppression and also in terms of the oppression of the yellow vests,
right,
Marine Le Pen would have never, ever really gotten away with. So it's going to come down to pocketbooks, and that's Ukraine. I think many people are going to say that Marine Le Pen cares more about France, Macron cares more about the U.S. and Brussels, and I think we really could be headed towards a Marine Le Pen victory, but we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you so much for that. Ramin Mazari there from Paris. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist, joins us from Normandy. Also joining us, Arnold August, an author and journalist who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Jeff Brown, let me first start with you. So we're looking at a turnout that's 4 percentage points lower than at the same stage that occurred back in 2017. At the same time, based on the initial results, Macron seen a 29.5%, Le Pen 23.5%. Your initial reaction to that?
Well, this is exactly what happened in 2017, and my wife and I voted in that election, and we voted in the election today. And the problem is that the press is totally controlled by the elites, and what's going to happen now in round two is that they will totally demonize Le Pen and call her a fascist, radical, racist, extremist, to push the people towards Macron. And in 2017, and before the first round, they made her look like she was an angel and a princess and a wonderful lady. And no, she's not that bad. And she's not that radical, because they did not want Mélenchon to get into the final round, because I think he's the only candidate that might have any chance of beating Macron. So here we are again, the left with 7 parties, all splintered. If all of those parties had backed Mélenchon, Mélenchon would be going against Macron in the second round.
Why didn't they?
And I think he could beat him.
Why do you think they didn't? At this point, do we have any who have endorsed either?
Well, the left in France has always been highly splintered. We've got You've got communists and Workers' Party, and then the socialists, ecologists, two or three different communist parties, and there's a lot of infighting, a lot of jealousy, a lot of the left here has been talking forever about a unified left, and the last time that happened, Mitterrand got elected, and that has not happened since.
Okay, Arnold August, looking over here, moving to the second round with obviously Macron and Le Pen, if you haven't heard. Let's break this down a little bit and first talk about whichever you like. Let's pick Le Pen. What do you think of Le Pen? She's being described, as our guest there said back in 2017, of being an extremist and so forth and so on, but now she has portrayed and been successful in portraying herself as somewhat more moderate. And that obviously was to allay any concerns that the voters may have. Do you agree with that? What are your views on Le Pen?
Well, of course, yeah, she is definitely, and this is always the case in these type of elections, such as in France or United States or Canada, people on the right try to shift change their appearance to be, more moderate in order to try to get some more votes. But one thing is very interesting, talking about trying to be more moderate, is that she actually visited Moscow, I think, in 2017, and she came back saying that she had a high regard for President Putin. Of course, now Macron is fighting against that, saying showing pictures of her in Moscow and trying to denigrate her with regards to the international affairs of being soft on Russia. So, it's a shift. It's a mixed ground. I mean, there is no clear way that one can describe Le Pen at this time, because everything is shifting according to circumstances, with the one and only goal trying to get votes.
When we take a look at the way that you said, Jeff Brown, that the media controls the way that these contenders and the incumbent is portrayed, perhaps showing the pluses and minuses, what is the real story, do you think? For example, we had our correspondent when he spoke to us saying that 7 out of 10 voters actually support Macron, but we're not seeing that at the polls. Or support Le Pen? Is that how? What is the deal? I mean, who has more popularity here?
Before every election, everyone who's registered to vote here receives a packet of information with the platform for all, and there were 12 candidates, mind you, which is too many. That's part of the problem with the French electoral system. And when you read Le Pen's platform, I don't think she's radical at all. She is definitely much more liberal than any Republican.
Give us one point that stands out.
Well, one point, she has a very socialist-minded, in terms of the 99% medical care, taking care of the people, providing, public services, et cetera. In fact, her economic advisor came from the Socialist Party. The only thing that she gets demonized here for is because she's the daughter of Mr. Le Pen, who was overtly racist. Le Pen is just against immigration, but that is not an unpopular platform around the world. And so, I mean, to be honest with you, other than the fact that she's against immigration, she's as far as I'm concerned, she's as much on the left as some of the other left-wing candidates. So the problem is the press is going to absolutely push her, or they're going to destroy her in the next 2 weeks, because we have to wait 2 weeks for the second round on the 24th. They will destroy her, The other thing is Macron, he's not middle of the road. He's a neoliberal right winger. He's a very neoliberal. World Economic Forum, Council on Foreign Relations. He is more right wing than Le Pen. but the press will make sure that that's not how it's portrayed, and that's the big problem here. Is the mass media, what I call the big lie propaganda machine, is what it decides who gets elected, unfortunately.
So let's put that into perspective, if we can, or if you can, Arnold August. We know that Marine Le Pen, one of the platforms that she ran on is the fact that she wants to somehow focus on the cost of living crisis and be able to tame that. Of course, we know that that's a huge problem for the French. Now, Macron, on the other hand, I'm not too sure how well he has done. They're touting a 7% GDP growth, but then when you take a look at the real figures, you can see that the deficit is still high. You're having a manufacturer base in France that's gone out of business. There's really, they're not doing that well. And also, we're looking at one of the worst inflations when it comes to energy. So who stands better? Who can fare better under those circumstances, you think?
Well, I think that, describing these specific programs of these two candidates, I don't think that it has very much currency or very much legitimacy amongst the population. Here in Montreal, there's a large number of French citizens, of course, who are voting today. And speaking briefly with them over the last few days, their frustration is how come, I mean, the previous speaker talked about the role of the media. It's very important. And I think the most important feature of the media in these elections is they focus solely on Le Pen and Macron, as if these are the only two candidates that count, that have a chance of winning. So it's like a vicious circle. They avoid talking about Mélenchon, and they concentrate on the other two, making it like a sure bet that there's no chance for Mélenchon can win, and one only the other two can win. Now, as far as I know, the Mélenchon has a 11% rating amongst the voters. In other words, it's quite important. And I, speaking to my friends here in Montreal who are voting, they're very disappointed that this time the Communist Party of France did not sit it out as they did previously and openly support Mélenchon. And if they would have done that, I think we would be in a different situation now, far more solid, with chances very much improved for Mélenchon to actually get into that second round. And I think that if one look at his general program internationally and nationally, it is very good. It's a solid left-wing program. There's no real reason why the Communist Party of France did not drop their own, sectarian, if I may use the word, interests and goals, and in support, put all their backing in support of Mélenchon. He's a very dynamic person. And the fact that the media are just ignoring him, we may be in for some kind of a surprise, because the voter turnout is so low. It is mainly because people have no confidence in the two main candidates and their programs, which more often than not seem to be just, platitudes to try to get votes. Is very obvious. And we could actually have a surprise this Sunday with regards to Mélenchon. Let us see.
Well, we need to talk about the economy a little bit more here, Jeff Brown. And I'm looking at comments made back in 2017, because I had a record of that. And one of them said, you can't make it to the end of the month. This is just one of the French protesters, which we'll talk about where he was protesting. You can't make it to the end of the month, even with two salaries. Looking at some of the comments now made by some of the French, they're still struggling to make ends meet. So what has Macron done? And we're looking again at the voter focus, which is during this post, if I can call it that, post-COVID era, whether the French government under Macron can handle what's coming its way, as opposed to Le Pen.
Well, since 2017, Macron, you have to understand that Macron is a neoliberal Trojan horse. He is a Rothschild regent. He was cultivated by the Rothschild family, Goldman Sachs. He is an elitist and has absolutely no concern whatsoever for the common man. In fact, he's going to give his speech tonight at Versailles. You know, where Louis, where you know Louis the 14th was. You know, but the problem is that I mean everything has gone south since the European Treaty in 2007. Salaries are going nowhere. Inflation's going up. Social services for the 99% are being slashed. Since Macron got elected in 2017, just as just one example, 17,000 hospital beds have been shut down. Taxes have been raised on the 99%. Taxes have been lowered on the 1%. Austerity has been increased on the 99%. Austerity doesn't exist for the 1%. That's why the yellow vests have been out there for the last 3 years, and Rahman Mazahiri has done a brilliant job. They express the frustration, and we live here. A year ago, we bought 1,000 liters of heating oil for 777 euros. We just paid 1,966 euros for that same 1,000 liters of heating oil. So it's a disaster. I mean, he is a disaster, but he is a disaster for the 99%. He is a dream come true for Washington, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Economic Forum, the CIA. He is their man. And right. But you turn on the French television, and you don't see this. You don't hear it. The yellow vests are invisible. That guy you quoted never sees the light of day except on press TV and other alternative websites. So it is just propaganda, 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 and the big lie propaganda machine makes sure that the 1% candidate gets in, and that's happened with Sarkozy and Hollande, and now with Macron, and he will get in for the second in the second round.
Well, Arnold August, how can that be turned around? A and B, do you think the French will be able to see through that, based on what our guest there from Normandy said? Because obviously, inflation, whether it's energy, food prices, basic goods, is going through the roof in many cases.
Well, I have to be an optimistic guy this morning. And, you know, France has its revolutionary traditions going back several centuries. And they have stood up to a lot of the neoliberal policies that have been going on in France over the last few years. I have hope that Mélenchon will, after all, be able to get into the second round. That's what I'm hoping for. And the people I'm speaking here in Montreal are hoping for that as well. But the basic thing, the headlines are the voter turnout is down. One, why? They don't say so. But the voter turnout is down because all the emphasis are on those two, you know, one, as the previous speaker said, the two 1% candidates who are not like the vast majority. So will their political consciousness be sharp enough, rebellious enough to make a break from the status quo, focus only on those two 1% candidates, and make a move to try to get Mélenchon into the second round, which I still think possible.
I'm going to now end it with a quote. I'm stuck between Le Pen and Macron. I'm going to go with Le Pen. If I can ask you, Jeff Brown, this is what she has said in her campaign trail. The presidential election day is a very important day because considering the situation of the country and the world, it will determine the course of not only the next 5 years, but also possibly the next 50 years. Do you agree with her?
It's maybe a little bit hyperbolic, but yeah, this is an important time for France and an important election. She lost 34% to 66% in 2017, and my wife and I voted for her in the second round because we knew that Macron was a train wreck to kill the working people in the 99%. I think Macron is still going to win, but the margin will be less. But he will, unfortunately, sadly, is still going to win.
Okay, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you, Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist from Normandy. Arnold August, a pleasure, author and journalist there from Montreal. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapway, it's goodbye. Until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his immaculate progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all around the world, assalamu alaikum and welcome to yet another edition from a series of Q&A in Islamic beliefs from IRIB English Radio. Dear brothers and sisters, if you have been following this series of shows, we are trying to answer the doubts and misconceptions on the Islamic beliefs which are received usually in the form of questions from different questioners from around the world. For that, we have again invited a respected scholar, guest of the show, Sheikh Nur Muhammad from Qom Seminary School. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Many thanks for accepting our invitation. It's a great pleasure for us to have you here. Sheikh, the question of the day that we are going to talk about is about the origins of the wars. It has been asked that why are most of the wars have a religious basis? I want to first ask that if the question that has been asked is a true question or not, then we can, inshallah, dive into the answer for that. And it continues to say that if religions are destroyed, then there will be no more war. Is it true that the origin and the base of most of the wars religion, then we have to make a big question from ourselves, why the religions are the basis and origins of wars? I would be thankful if you shed some light on that.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The answer is absolutely no. If you look at the old wars, even nowadays, unfortunately, we witness some of the wars. And even in the ancient time, whenever you look at the any and each war which was, you know, inflicted to the humanity, it was not related to any religion, you know.
Yeah.
Rather, it was related and it was stemmed because of the, you know, rebellion nature of some people, you see. Some people, they were, you know, looking for their own interest. They want to have the, you know, go to another country and to invade another country and to have other territory, you know, attached to their own territory and country. And because of that, they waged a war.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it is only because of the rebellion nature of some people. You know, unjust nature of some people. They want to, you know, wage war. They want to massacre people, innocent people, And because of that, and only because of their, you know, interest, they want to wage a war. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with any religion. Not only, you know, religion of Islam, divine religion of Islam, or any other, for example, Christianity, Judaism, or any other religion. It had nothing to do anything with that.
Very true.
And let me add to this point that we have the verse in the Noble Quran. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that, I have revealed this religion to you, and I have revealed this book, Noble Quran, to you, because for the removal of conflicts of people, okay? I just want to remove the conflicts and the, you know, disputes among people. I want to remove that. And because of that, I sent down to you, you know, the book and revelation. Let me share this verse of Noble Quran. كان الناس أمة واحدة فبعث الله النبيين مبشرين ومنذرين وأنزل معهم الكتاب بالحق ليحكم بين الناس فيما اختلفوا فيه. First of all, people, they were one and single community, and gradually conflict and disputes occurred between people, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent down the revelation and books, and he sent down book, and of course other prophets giving glad tidings and, you know, giving warning.
Yeah.
In order to remove conflicts between people, which which was occurred between people. Okay? لَيَحْكُمَ بَيْنَ النَّاسِ فِي مَخْتَلَفُوا فِي. It means that the reason and one of the main philosophy for sending the revelation and for sending the prophets, it was because he wanted to remove disputes from among the people. So it is, I don't know how this dear questioner asked this question.
The question might have looked at the wars that we see, for example, in the region of West Asia, like that of ISIS, let's say, creating some wars in Syria and, let's say, Iraq, and creating unrest and kind of war that actually create lots of problems for the people of the region. They might say, okay, these people with the intention of, let's say, bringing another version, another reading of Islam, are making such wars. But instead, it can be said that, okay, in the war that we are now seeing in the region with, in the Europe, between Russia and Ukraine, what is then the motivation? So if this is, let's say, the motivation of the first is going to be a religious one, what is the motivation for the second? I'd like your own opinion and your explanations on that.
You see that even for talking about the case of ISIS, you see that and Daesh groups, even there is no, it has nothing to do with the religion, you know? Because the rest of the verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that, إِلَّا وَمَا اخْتَلَفَ فِيهِ إِلَّا الَّذِينَ أُوتُوهُ مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَتْهُمُ الْبَيِّنَاتِ بَغْيًا بَيْنَهُمْ. Just I want to recite this part of the verse, because this part of the verse directly talking and addressing the, you know, some people who claim to be religious. And because of the religious motivation, they want to wage war. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that after the revelation, after the coming and appearance of the prophets, and after the sending of the religion, there are second conflicts and dispute between people, and this conflict, it was only because of the injustice and rebellion nature of other people, you know, so-called religious people.
Very true.
Okay? مِن بَعْدِ مَا جَاءَتْهُمُ الْبَيِّنَاتِ بَغْيًا بَيْنَهُمْ. After the clear proofs, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent down to them, another conflict occurred between people, between so-called religious people, because of the injustice and because of the rebellions.